Greetings again, everyone. A couple of quick announcements before I begin. I have canceled a couple of our major radio stations, and we're trying to change the times on some other ones. We're going to keep experimenting and giving them a little bit of a chance. 1 week ago, all seven radio stations playing at Sunday night brought in one telephone call. That's for an average of a little over $1,000 for one call. And I simply cannot spend the tithe money of God's people that way. We've had a double handful, stack of about that high, I would say, perhaps between 150, 200, 250 letters at the outside for the entire 19,000 letters that went out, telling our people on the mailing list where they might be able to hear the program and asking them to dial it in, report to me how well they can hear it, can they hear it at all, and so on. I was hoping that eventually we could afford to have a radio program more as a maintenance factor for scattered brethren of the church and or the extended church, or simply people on our mailing list who are already on the mailing list and upon whom we have spent probably $30, $40, $70, $100 to get their name on the mailing list, and they would be able to listen to the program as a sort of a maintenance factor. They would be able to hear it and feel like they were part of the work. That was really the primary purpose for going on. The primary purpose, I hasten to remind you, was not to get an avalanche of new names on the mailing list. But if there cannot at least be a little modicum, just a few names from time to time, some kind of a response on radio, then I think it is a waste of money. We have discussed this. I've told a business office recently that I wanted some changes made. Let me quickly make these announcements for those of you on the tape program and for the local churches. Beginning tomorrow, July 17th, my program will air twice each Sunday on WOAI Radio, 1200 on the dial, San Antonio. The new times are 6:30 a.m., which will only be picked up locally, and 9:30 p.m., about an hour earlier than it was. So we will try that for a while and see if changing that time gets any better response. Also, I have canceled KOMA Radio Oklahoma City and WRBA Richmond, Virginia, as of August 10th. Now, they will be on tomorrow night, and again the week after that, but then by August 10th they will no longer be on. WSM Radio Nashville, Tennessee will air again at about an hour earlier than the time we had, 9:30 p.m. starting tomorrow night. Those of you who live in this area probably can get easily, I can on my car radio or at home, WOAI San Antonio at 9:30 p.m., no problem. I hate to go over there to that radio studio and put out every bit as much energy in one half-hour ad-lib, half-hour radio program, as I do on television, and spend over $1,100 and some odd for seven radio stations and have one phone call. It just seems to be very difficult for me to get all pumped up and go over there and say, I think at least one person is going to hear this, and so I'll go over there and flail away for a half an hour and expect the phone to ring once. It's very, very difficult to justify spending that kind of money. So we're making whatever alterations we can in answer to some questions from some of you who have looked into radio in the past. We looked into drive time. We called every one of those stations and others. It is simply unavailable. In most cases, they will not permit religion in what is called drive time. That means go to work time. It means go home time. From like 6, 6:30 to 8 or 8:30, and from like 4:30 to about 6:30 or 7 in the evening. Prime time, forget it. That's when people are watching television. After prime time, 9:30, 10, 10:30 p.m., if you had enough of them, if we canceled all of television and put all of our marbles in one basket and went back on radio, we might get about a third or a fourth as many telephone calls as we do on television. We would not get anywhere near as many. We have proved that over and over again. In the meantime, I've had to pass up some really lucrative television times because there simply wasn't the money to obtain them, and some of them are the time slots being vacated by the worldwide church as it phases completely out of television in big city markets, including Washington, D.C., and I would love to be able to get those times, and there simply isn't any money for it. So I want to crank that into your thinking, and perhaps you will understand why we're making some of the moves we are. I want to take you through a little bit of history. First of all, going to 1 Thessalonians, the second chapter, to refresh our memory about a prophecy. The Apostle Paul was inspired to write because of what he saw rearing its ugly head during the time that he was growing elderly. And there was a vast, insidious cancer growing within the early New Testament church as more and more Greeks and foreigners who were non-Jewish were converted to the faith. And they brought with them all of the old Babylonish mystery religion that they had grown up in, idolatry of every kind. And then, of course, there was a counterforce at work in the early New Testament church, which we know a great deal, which was the Pharisaical school of thought, which wanted every one of these pagans who were coming into the New Testament church to obey the laws of Moses and to become circumcised and to be a Jewish proselyte. Being converted and believing in Jesus Christ was not enough for these people. You can see that that was a major struggle all through the book of Acts and through the writings of the Apostle Paul. And here in 2 Thessalonians 2, he said, "We beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and by our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit," knowing that there were false spirits who would influence people, "neither by spirit nor by word," false sermons, preachments, teachings, Bible studies, whatever, or rumor, "nor by letter as from us." There were those who would actually stoop to putting Paul's signature on a letter, and it was not from Paul. "That the day of Christ is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any manner, shape, form, method, or means." Because that's what he means. "For that day shall not come except there come a falling away first." Back in the 1950s, when I would read that scripture, I would make the point that you don't fall away unless you have first come to the truth. The falling away is not one pagan church going back and joining another pagan church. It is not people who are following the apostolic creeds and the Athanasian doctrine and creed and who have gone along with Mother Rome, like the Anglican church is beginning to do, recanting and going back into the fold. That is not a falling away, as Scripture implies, and as Paul most assuredly meant when he wrote that scripture. He wrote that scripture about beloved men and women, brethren and sisters, converted, in whom was the Holy Spirit of God, who knew the truth of God, who were in the church of God, giving up, falling away from the truth of God, and simply going back into their former customs and practices. Now, sometimes it takes a lot of people a long time to fall, depending upon how far up the tree they have climbed and what tiny little limb it is to which they are clinging. They might begin to fall by slipping off one limb, and as you hear a cracking, breaking noise, they are screaming as they go, they grab onto a slightly larger limb. That gives way, and they fall a little further. And I think we're seeing that that is beginning to happen among some of the people of God. I want to hold my place there and go back to the book of Daniel, to the 11th chapter, the most lengthy prophecy in all the Bible that is a direct quotation from an archangel. The 11th chapter of the book of Daniel was given to Daniel by an archangel who reveals himself to Daniel in the 10th chapter. And everything that follows thereafter is first-person quotation, and I think we're all very familiar with what it says beginning in verse 40. "At the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him," this king of the north, that we have always identified as a beast power, which is going to rise up in Central Europe, which is going to be a resurrection, an end-time resurrection of an ancient Roman, Holy Roman Empire, but is going to have an end-time revival, just like the one that Mussolini and Hitler tried to put together and called it the Holy Roman Empire, but failed, and it was only short-lived, and it was very, very fragile, and didn't last very long. The king of the south was at that time a lesser pharaoh named Ptolemy Soter, who pushed at the general who inherited one of the northern parts of Alexander's kingdom, which was one of the Seleucids, Seleucus Nicator. The wars that raged back and forth across Palestine were obviously terribly destructive to Palestine and very destructive to the Jews. Now, This had a little typical fulfillment. My father really latched on to that, was very excited about it, when I was only 5 years of age. Because Mussolini was a neo-fascist dictator in Italy at that time. The Italian nation, as the German nation and the American nation, were all in the grips of a terrible Great Depression, a global, worldwide, great economic distress, a Great Depression. Along came strong men, despots, dictators, in Italy first and Germany second, and put people back to work, went out and began vast public works projects, built great monuments, great autopistas, as in their case, or Autobahn in the German case, and great public works, and put hundreds of thousands and millions of people back to work. They began to build armies. They began to march. And my father and mother saw Mussolini invade Ethiopia using some of those ancient old Junkers trimotors at that time, for the very first time in all of world history, using paratroopers who would bail out of aircraft with bicycles on their back, taken apart in two pieces, and took the capital, Addis Ababa, and of course Italian Somaliland, and occupied the Horn of Africa right around and beneath the Suez Canal. To him, that was extremely significant. And when I was only 5 years of age, my father actually thought, prior to Hitler's accession to the chancellorship, that Mussolini might well become the beast of biblical prophecy. The reason he thought that was because it was an Italian dictator in the city of Rome. And always, the Holy Roman Empire had been, the emperor had been crowned by the Pope. And they were always subservient from the time of Justinian to the Pope. Though most of the time it was a Germanic kingdom, still he thought Mussolini might be the beast. It was not until Hitler began to loom larger than Mussolini, and Mussolini began to become sort of a secondary ally to Hitler, that he thought Hitler would be the final beast. And my father was wrong about that, but then if you had been living in the 1930s, in 36, 38, 39, when Hitler invaded Warsaw and Poland, you might have thought the same thing. So there was a shadowy, typical fulfillment of this, but there is to come yet an end-time fulfillment of the same thing. The King of the North, in response to whatever it means to push at. Now, we can just let our minds go all over the place about that. It obviously seems to be something short of an armed invasion into the territory of the King of the North. It is something that perhaps it's economic, perhaps it's political, perhaps it's religious. It may have to do with an embargo, like shutting off vital resources like oil. It may have to do with a regional dispute involving the King of the South grabbing territory, maybe Israel. Maybe the King of the South attacks Israel, and the King of the North responds and does the following. Comes against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and horsemen. You can read today, tanks and armored columns of vehicles. And with many ships, and with aircraft, of course, and he shall enter into countries, many nations, many countries, and shall overflow and pass over. The Bible always used an overflowing river flowing over its dikes and its banks as a type of armies flowing over national borders. He shall enter also into the glorious land. Notice the difference in the language here. He comes against the King of the South, but the King of the South is not the King of the glorious land. He comes against other countries, but the King of the South is not the king of other countries. The King of the South is only the king of a nation unidentified here, but anciently of Egypt, who is the King of the South. He enters into the glorious land, Palestine, the Holy Land, modern-day Israel, but it doesn't say he destroys it or attacks it or does so in anger or in war. It really just says that he enters into that land. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these escape out of his hand, even Edom, which we believe is Turkey, and Moab, which we believe is the Jordanians and perhaps the Iraqis, and the chief of the children of Ammon, which also may be the Hashemites, some of the eastern kingdoms like Jordan, and the ones to the east of the area of Israel. Verse 42, he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So the land of Egypt comes into play last, and it could well be that Egypt is the nation. I don't know if it's Saudi Arabia, Egypt, or another one in the region who will fulfill the prophecy as the King of the South. But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and Ethiopians, or Kush and Put, which seems to mean Bangladesh, India, not just the little political entities of North Africa like Gaddafi's Libya or Ethiopia as we know it today, but Kush and Put, there's other people entirely. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. And east and north of there is Russia and all the way to China. And you're looking at vast regions, nuclear armed. Therefore, he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. And he shall plant the tabernacles, plural, of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. All the biblical commentaries, Halley's Bible Handbook, Hastings Bible Dictionary, Kiddo's Bible Encyclopedia, all the articles on this historically agree that this is Jerusalem, Palestine. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. Now, further than that, all of those sources I mentioned will point out Antiochus Epiphanes, point out that there was a statue of Jupiter Olympus set up in the temple to profane the temple, and point out the fact that eventually Titus came in and that the Roman standards that were planted in the streets and around the temple of Jerusalem were looked upon as idols by the Jews, and that eventually the temple was destroyed, the very temple in which Jesus taught, the one where he was in the treasury that talked about the widow's mite, and that every one of those stones were removed, but that portions of the wall remained as they still do today. Now, reading right on, because it is men later on that divided this into verses and chapters, and at that time, at the time that all of this is happening, Michael shall stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of thy people. And Gabriel is doing the talking. And there shall be a time of trouble. Matthew 24, 21 and 22, Jesus said, then shall be great tribulation such as was not from the beginning of the world at this time, no, nor ever indeed shall be. There shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that same time. Got to be talking at the same time. Otherwise, each time would eclipse the other time, and since each time is described as a time completely without precedent, unparalleled, it's got to be talking of the same time, which is the Great Tribulation. And at that time, thy people shall be delivered. Why delivered? Because at that time, they are in a state of captivity. They are not in a state of freedom. Everyone that shall be found written in the book, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. So this is at the time that culminates in the second coming of Christ and the resurrection of the dead in Christ. Some to everlasting life, and some, and he's talking broadly here of an entire period of 1100 years depicted in Revelation 20, to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness. So there are those who are involved in a work which results in a complete turnaround in the lives of many, many people, countless people. We see the fruit of their work in the sixth and seventh chapters of the book of Revelation, where when the heavenly signs occur, which are an announcement that the day of the Lord is about to begin, and the heavenly signs occur after the great tribulation against Jacob, which is primarily the United States and the British Commonwealth, which is Israel, has already really occurred, and they are already destroyed nationally, economically, militarily, and they are already in captivity. And then comes great signs in the heavens. You do begin to wonder. And I remember a sermon, I believe, just last year, when I said, as the title of the sermon, is this the way it begins? And I pointed to the floods that were devastating the American midsection as a year ago in the spring, the Mississippi and all of its branches began to overflow the entire corn and wheat belt of the United States. We all know that that was so massive that it is going to take decades for the nation to ever recover. It has resulted in whole towns having to be actually moved to higher ground. For the first time in history, so modern history as well as we can know it, and it has been written, the capital of a major state was completely shut down, Des Moines, Iowa, by floodwaters. Now, this early summer, as I have seen the reports, that very same area that just a year ago was inundated with floodwaters has been stricken with drought. The last report I saw, already 25% of the American corn crop had been destroyed. Another 25% was up for grabs within about 1 week, and that was several weeks ago if they didn't get rain, and I'm not sure they have. I hadn't heard a report. And then along the heels of that comes all these terrible things happening in Georgia and Alabama with terrible floods down there, costing, again, multiple billions of dollars. The fires in California, the great earthquake of last year. Now, by now, you all know what is supposed to happen tomorrow. I'm not Chicken Little. The sun is going to shine on the earth tomorrow, I believe. It may be impossible for them to actually see the impact of a great meteor that's already broken up into several pieces. It is going to smash into the surface of Venus. Or is it Venus? Jupiter, I'm sorry, the big one, Jupiter, which is about, what, 1,000 times larger than the Earth? And the Jovian atmosphere is a thick, poisonous one of swirling clouds. You know, it's got that famous big, huge storm that always appears in the pictures that you have seen of it. And apparently, it is going to impact this huge planet on the opposite side. So it'll be some time before we perhaps see pictures about what is going to happen. Whether that will be visible here on Earth, I think they said something like 36 or more thousand miles per hour, incredible speeds that are achieved by these comets out into space that are going to smash into that planet tomorrow. So it does make me wonder, because that type of thing you don't remember in your lifetime. There's not an 85-year-old person in this room that remembers of an event like that. You simply don't. And you really don't know, and neither do astronomers, exactly what's going to happen, what the fallout will be, what, if any, effect it will have on the solar system. So it's interesting when we see all of these things happening at the same time. Verse 3, they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever, pointing out what is the reward of those who are involved in God's work of turning people from sin to a life of righteousness, a work that results in turning people 180 degrees in the opposite direction from the way of Satan, the way of greed and vanity and jealousy and vitriol and lust and selfishness and get, to the way of Jesus Christ, which is mercy, forgiveness, love, which is long-suffering, meekness, gentleness, goodness, against which there is no law. Or is there a work that is reaching out to the general public, attempting to turn many to righteousness? And who is doing that work, and who are these people, and what is their message? But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro. That characterizes the world in which you live. All you got to do is get on the freeway when it's rush hour. All you got to do is to look at a busy airport like Chicago's O'Hare or DFW. All you've got to do is to look at the freeways out here on any given holiday. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Man's footprints dot the moon. Knowledge is increasing. The field of electronics and of processing of data, the invention of fiber optics and the hookup of cables into American homes that is going to probably wipe out a lot of local stores where people can shop just automatically with a plastic credit card and poke a few buttons on their television set and buy things and have it delivered to their door. This superhighway of purchasing, like the QVC thing, that is going to be a super giant commercial industry very, very shortly. There's never been anything like this in all the history of mankind. My father, Herbert W. Armstrong, was born before the Wright brothers flew. And my father lived to go around and around and around the world at least 25 or 30 times in a super sophisticated jet airplane. My grandmother, who was born the year Lincoln was shot, and would tell me stories about the Indians who would come to their home in Iowa and demand tobacco and coffee, lived to be 96 and a half, and on her 80th birthday, flew on an old DC-3, which was then the state-of-the-art airliner in the United States, to go from Eugene to Portland, Oregon, for her 80th birthday. And we have a family film when that happened in 1946, And there I am in a little yellow sweater, 16 years of age, and all of my cousins and so on, little children, who are now up in their 50s, and some of them grandparents. And it's quite an interesting little bit of history. It seems so long ago. But to my father, who told me one day, you know, Ted, he said, well up into his 80s, I look into the mirror and I see this old wrinkled face. And he said, that's not me looking at myself. I am the person in here. That's just the face of an old man, but that's not the way I feel inside. I didn't understand what he meant then. I do now. I do now. Life is too short, and it goes by too swiftly. And when we are young and have time only for fun, we don't think of the really serious long-range things. He said, I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on that side of the bank of the river. And the one said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand into heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever, that it shall be for 3.5 years. The same span of time that we see Jerusalem is trodden down to the Gentiles, the same span of time that we see is required to fulfill the prophecies of the Great Tribulation, 2.5 years, and the Day of the Lord, 1 year. 3.5 years. And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, who would that be? Who is it who is doing the work of turning many unto righteousness? Now, here are a couple of very disparate Bible scriptures, one in 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, and another one clear back in the book of Daniel. It talks about God's church, those doing a work of turning people to righteousness, from the way of the devil and the way of this world to the way of God, causing people to become converted. But somehow, there is to become a falling away before all these great events occur, falling away from the truth. And then he says, there is to come a scattering of the power of the holy people. Then all of these things are to be finished. Back in 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, he says, let no man deceive you by any means, verse 3, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is worship, so that he, as God, sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. I brought with me some samples of the old Plain Truth magazines that I helped write way, way back years ago. I don't have them here in any particular order. Mr. Bill Ellis has been doing some research for me. Bill, I got these off your desk. I'll give them back to you. But I went in because he had gone through a number, as I have, and had researched many of our publications in past years. I have an enormous number of them here. I'll give you just a few quotes. The Plain Truth, page 32, November 1968. In all these trips, the Pope is setting a new direction for modern Catholicism. He is laying the groundwork for a Vatican appeal to the world's masses to follow his lead in diplomatic and political affairs. He has publicly and dramatically backed the United Nations, giving the non-religious organization every chance to succeed. If the United Nations fails, then the Pope's advance indications are that he may decide to chart his own course toward world government and peace. Interesting comment written in November 1968 in the Plain Truth magazine, isn't it? Do you think the United Nations has succeeded? Has it succeeded in Bosnia-Herzegovina? Has it succeeded in the Middle East? Will it succeed if advanced silkworms and scuds come raining down from Syria and from other surrounding nations on Israel someday? They already have, except that Saddam Hussein did not yet achieve the technology to link his biological and or chemical warheads onto those scuds and instead had conventional explosive warheads, and some of them did get through, bits and pieces of them, even those that exploded overhead Tel Aviv. You saw it in living color on your own television sets when a Patriot missile would intercept one, but portions of it came down in Tel Aviv, and I got there shortly after that occurred. We went over to the Middle East. We didn't try to go to those regions because tourists were just clogging the streets. They were closing off the areas, but there were pictures of those neighborhoods in Tel Aviv that had been devastated by these scuds falling out of the sky. What if they contained nerve gas, poison gas like Saddam Hussein used against the Kurds? What would happen to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people in Israel? If the United Nations fails, then the Pope's advance indications are that he may decide to chart his own course toward world government and peace. Thus, religion would say, in effect, we tried the United Nations, but it just doesn't work. The world from now on, the article went on, will see increasing participation in political and diplomatic affairs by the Roman Catholic Church. 1968, the Plain Truth magazine. Personal from the editor, June 1967, from my father. And I quote, I have just come from Jerusalem, the old city in Jordan, and I want to bring you up to date on where we stand at the moment. For 33 years, I've been telling the radio audience and readers of the Plain Truth that the final world disturbances and military battles of this age will center in the Middle East and on Jerusalem in particular. Any day now, you may expect the Israelis of the country that calls itself Israel to flood over with a military invasion into the Jordanian half of the divided city of Jerusalem. He is quoting from something that he wrote earlier. The Jordan sector is the old city. This was in June 67. The only part of Jerusalem that was built in the time of Christ. Then he went on to say, there will be a Jewish temple built in Jerusalem with animal sacrifices once again being offered. It is going to take some time to build such a temple, and I don't see how they have another month to spare in taking over the old city, now in Arab hands, if they're going to have the temple built by the time indicated by the prophecy. Another comment, for a long time the Jewish people have had in mind the rebuilding of the temple, though they keep it pretty secret, and it must be built on the exact site of Solomon's temple. That's what he thought, what he wrote in 1967, in June of that year. The Plain Truth, February 1974, I quote, Lebanon's Ambassador Gora, whom I interviewed in the United Nations, says, the common concern of the Vatican and of the Arab countries about the fate of Jerusalem is growing. Israel's Gabriel Stein said, if Vatican-Arab relations should take on an undercurrent of being an alliance against Israel and the Jews, it becomes a political involvement and, of course, has very dangerous implications for us. According to Israel's Etzer Weizmann, I wish the Vatican could play a role in persuading the Arabs to approach our way of thinking, but I'm afraid the Vatican will most likely just stick to the Christian problem, and we will most likely have a confrontation over Jerusalem. Another quote, I keep looking for some as yet unforeseen event. I will hold who this is from in just a moment and tell you who this is who said this. I keep looking for some as yet unforeseen event that will change the present progress of relations among the big powers of the world, a change that is absolutely necessary if we're not to face catastrophe within a short period of 20 to 30 years. Was that a doomsday prophet? No, it was Dr. Albert Sabin, developer of the Sabin polio vaccine and director of Israel's prestigious Weizmann Institute of Science, written by Dr. Kuhn, Plain Truth magazine, February 1974. An article in the Plain Truth, New Vatican Role in the Middle East, 1974, the Plain Truth magazine for May, on page 29. An international city, question mark. As long ago as August 1947, the United Nations Special Committee on Palestine proposed an internationalized Jerusalem. The same idea was echoed again in 1967 after Israel captured the old city. Jerusalem, the plan proposed, would remain part of Israel, but Christian and Muslim holy places would be administered and protected by the Vatican and the Kingdom of Jordan, respectively. 20th Century Watch, May-June 1980, an article that I wrote, one quote, with a military occupation of the Holy Land, Jerusalem will be surrounded with armies, and with a great false religious leader sitting in pomp and splendor in a new, quote, palace or temple building in Jerusalem, the abomination of desolation will have been set up. Article from February 1976 in the Plain Truth magazine, I believe. Yes, it is, because here is Ray Kosanke's name on it. Vatican's new activism, quote, the Vatican Secretariat for Non-Christians has come out strongly for a Middle East peace settlement, which includes, quote, recognition of the rights of Palestinians and a special status for Christian holy places in Israel and the Israeli-occupied West Bank of the Jordan. End of quote. In our premier issue of TCW with a color cover that came out back in 1979, I believe, on the very last page of this article, which was the lead article, A Monster Stirs, I said the following. What if the Pope himself were to propose the internationalization of Jerusalem? Parenthesis, this has in fact been proposed by papal leadership in the past. The Declaration of Jerusalem is an open city, open to all religions and all political factions. Later on, I said, Bible prophecy says the coming abomination of desolation will be set up in the holy place in Jerusalem, which means the fourth time in history that the temple has been so desecrated, probably referring to a sacred room inside the temple. Later on, I said it means that once again sacrifices will be offered in Jerusalem. Those sacrifices are to cease, apparently, at the time this abomination of the desolation is set up. And then I quoted how he will sit in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God, out of 2 Thessalonians 2. 1986, May, June, new round of war in the Middle East. What is next in the TCW? I won't read from all of this. There are a number of quotations, and I've got probably a dozen of them, and there are many, many more at home. A Palestinian state, will it bring peace? That I wrote in 1989. A couple of quick quotes. The Pope has repeatedly called for a corpus separatum for Jerusalem, declaring the city a separate entity, not a part of the sovereign territory of any specific state, but open to all major religions. Now, what if the Pope, seeing that Jerusalem is the pivotal point in all these ages of struggle, makes the following announcement? The most ancient site of the Mother Church is not Rome, but Jerusalem. Jerusalem is where our Savior taught. It's where he died, where he ascended to heaven. Jerusalem is where the apostles first taught. Therefore, in an unprecedented, history-smashing move, I am going to move the site of the Vatican. What if the Pope moves to Jerusalem? Think about it. He could dare the warring powers to move against him. No Western power would dare resist him. He would then establish himself in a temporary building, while a major basilica or temple would be constructed. Or if, and I emphasize if, a temple had already been built by the Jews prior to these events, he would move into it, thus fulfilling a major part of Christ's prophecy, 1989. Usually when I receive a lengthy fax, it's around the corner of my office in a little enclave, it comes from a nut. I will get a lot of faxes, and it'll have a lot of weird prognostications and idiocy, and there will be things to look at it like that, tear it up, and throw it away. Day before yesterday, I received a fax. It was so lengthy that it spilled all down across the floor. And it was so long that I put it over my shoulder and walked into my office, trailing it behind me. And here's what it said. Urgent. From Dr. James D. Tabor, Department of Religious Studies, University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Jim Taylor went to a West Texas Christian college before he came to Ambassador College. Came through Ambassador College. I knew him quite well. Then for many years worked as the chairman of the theological department in William & Mary, and now has a chair as the Department of Religious Studies, University of North Carolina at Charlotte, is probably one of the best known men in the world involving ancient manuscripts, and has launched a project to actually produce a brand new Bible directly from the most ancient texts that he can find, and is very respected in Israel because he has worked with a number of the people very high, rabbis and teachers and so on, in Israeli educational institutions. Urgent. Please bring to the immediate attention of Ron Dart and Garner Ted Armstrong. Dear Ron and Ted, I just pulled this off the internet late last night. It is quite reliable, directly from Israel. I think we have all been wondering what has been behind all these visits between PLO and Israeli leaders in the Vatican since last fall. This is apparently it. I had heard rumors of this previously from my rabbinic contacts in Jerusalem, but this is the first hard news I've been able to get. This is hard to believe, but it fits all the facts as they are unfolding. Of course, Ted, you and your father were saying this for years, so it finally looks like we will see it happen. This should crush all ideas others have had of late that the beast, in quotes, is some other power or comes from some other direction, i.e. Muslim, etc. Clearly, the old mother harlot is stirring again. Here comes the fact. From Avril Frege, Jerusalem, quote, Peres gives Jerusalem to Vatican. In a message given to Jordan's King Hussein on Saturday evening, a high-level delegation of officials of the Vatican stated that the old city of Jerusalem must be under one power only. The one power they were referring to is the Vatican itself, that has signed an agreement with Israel to gain authority over the holy sites of Jerusalem. A close friend of Israel's foreign minister, Shimon Peres, French intellectual Mark Halter, revealed in late May that he personally delivered a letter from Peres to the Pope that outlined the foreign minister's plans for Jerusalem. According to Halter, quote, Peres offered to hand over sovereignty of Jerusalem's old city to the Vatican, end of quote. According to the details of the plan, the city will stay the capital of Israel, but will be administered by the Vatican. The city will have an Israeli mayor and a Palestinian mayor, both under orders from the Pope. The plan was first published in the Italian newspaper La Stampa on September 10, 1993, 3 days before Rabin met Arafat in Washington. Further details of the plan call for Jerusalem to become the second Vatican of the world, with all three major religions represented within but under the authority of the Vatican. A Palestinian state will emerge in confederation with Jordan, with its religious capital being Jerusalem and its administrative capital situated elsewhere, possibly Nablus. Maybe now you know why Yasser Arafat has said when he calls for Jerusalem to be their capital, he is speaking in a spiritual sense. Pope meets Israel's chief rabbi, may visit Jerusalem, by William Montalbano, Times staff writer, Vatican City. And this is a very recent date. The rabbi went to see the Pope next year in Jerusalem, he proposed. I hope divine providence will one day allow me to go again as a pilgrim to the Holy Land, Pope John Paul II replied, with thanks to Israeli Meir Lau, chief rabbi of Israel. The Pope and the rabbi, two men of faith sprung from shared Polish roots, met in friendship Tuesday at a historic high water mark of relations between their two religions. You know, of course, there are many other clippings here. Pope tells Lau time for a visit is approaching, and so on. You know that full ambassadors have been established and diplomatic relations between the Vatican and Israel. Some news clippings pulled off the Dow Jones Newswire. Israel, PLO still haggling. Cairo, PLO and Israeli negotiators continued haggling over how to achieve Palestinian autonomy in the occupied lands Wednesday. The delegations resumed talks unexpectedly Tuesday night, a day after negotiations were suspended. Both sides breakfasted with PLO Chairman Yasser Arafat Wednesday, an optimistic signal, that on January 27th of 94. In a related matter, King Hussein of Jordan called Wednesday for an interfaith dialogue to determine sovereignty over the Christian, Jewish, and Islamic holy places in Jerusalem. It was announced Monday that Israeli PLO negotiations were being suspended until next week, after a weekend meeting between Arafat and Israeli Foreign Minister Shimon Peres, whom I have met. And by the way, a man whom we interviewed, who is called Avi Posner, Avi short for Aviram, which is Abraham in their language, is the direct representative of the Israeli government to the Vatican. And Posner was under the previous administration their information minister. And I know him, so that's interesting. It might be a good connection to exploit a little later on. Hussein suggested it's time to move the issue of Jerusalem's holy sites outside the political equation. The Jordanian repeated the Arab stance that Israel must return the Arab portion of the city to their control. Israel, as said, the city is its capital and maintains that it is indivisible and not negotiable. When I talked to Mayor Teddy Kollek about 3 years ago when we were over there and I asked him, would you ever relinquish Israeli control over Jerusalem? He said, not one inch. And he was extremely adamant about it. This takes it out of the political arena, allows the Pope to move in to the old city, and where will he go when he arrives? Well, this time the Pope, when he goes over there, will not be coming as an outsider. This time he won't be like a foreigner, a Polish, or a Polish citizen living in Italy as the Pope who is visiting a faraway land, but he will probably stay in the residence of the Vatican ambassador. And he probably will then give a high mass in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And who knows what kind of a sermon that will be. When I read that great big lengthy thing with all of the things that I have read for you that I went back and researched and some more that I want to quote before I close, I had goosebumps on the top of my head all the way down my back. My hair was standing up. I said, it's beginning to happen. Providentially, on the same day, Mr. Dart brought to my desk two articles during his visit to Germany. Our President Clinton urged Chancellor Helmut Kohl that the Germans should begin to shoulder far more of their fair share of policing the world. Kohl agreed, saying, we must not just sit back, because they finally changed the German Constitution. How many times over how many decades have you heard me say a change is coming in the German and the Japanese constitutions to allow participation of German and Japanese armed forces in trouble spots all over the world? Now, as I look at all these elements, they that turn many to righteousness, the scattering of the holy people and its power, a falling away from God's original truth, the rising up of a great religious leader who himself tries to impose the Athanasian Creed and the Trinity upon all the little daughters that came out of his great waddling, madam-like church, but kept the essential elements of her doctrines. And I see what is happening to God's church, which should have been a completely integrated, one body, absolutely huge and having a gigantic impact on world opinion and world leaders, should have been doing what these other people are doing, should have had its own television network by now, should be on literally 600, 700, 800, or 1,000 television stations all over the United States with this kind of documentation, rubbing their faces in it, telling them this is what we've been saying for over 40 years. And instead, the parent organization has backed away. They will not say a word about the identity of Israel. They will not preach about prophecy. They won't talk about the abomination of desolation. They won't label the Pope for who he is because they've adopted his doctrine, his Trinity. And here are these things beginning to happen all at the same time. What time is it? Where are we in Bible prophecy? That is to be the subject of an article that we are working furiously on to revise very quickly, to update it, not revise it, because it was already written and turned in just the other day, for the September issue of 20th Century Watch, where a great deal of this documentation and all this information will be contained with many corroborating biblical scriptures. And I would urge every one of you along the way on the tape program and you here in this room, make sure that you read that when it comes out, because it is going to be thorough. It is going to do exactly as we did in the premier issue back in 1990 when we went back and searched out 54 separate quotations from old issues of the Plain Truth magazine to prove and to demonstrate beyond a shadow of a doubt that we had predicted German reunification, that East Europe would come out from behind the Iron Curtain, that the Warsaw Pact would become redundant, that a United States of Europe would rise in Central Europe, and that eventually all these events we're seeing shape up would come to pass. Now, I'm not saying this to a doubting or a skeptical audience who is unaware of the documentation that I presented to you today. Most of you, many of you who have been around for about 25 or 30 years, are very, very well aware of it. But when you see it beginning to come to pass, is it time for us to obey and to heed what Jesus Christ of Nazareth said? When you see these things beginning to come to pass, then look up and know that your redemption is nigh.